Hello, everybody. I'm here today with Kathy Wiseman and Teresa Edmondson. How are you both doing today?
Good.
So glad to have you.
Looking forward to our chat.
Oh, me too. Kathy Wiseman is an internationally acclaimed leader, speaker, and consultant in both family wealth transfer and Bowen Family Systems theory. Through her company, Working Systems Inc., Kathy consults with forward-thinking clients, evolving a singular and sought-after approach. Kathy's secret to keeping her work fresh and modern is her adventurous mind, deep curiosity, and innate drive to turn theory into action. Her humor and fascination with people and story make her a relevant partner to all generations. She has worked with financial institutions and family offices to develop tools, experiences, and curricula. She equips advisors and their clients to uncover hidden solutions as they respond more thoughtfully and less reactively to family relationship challenges in the wealth transfer process. And Teresa Edmondson is the founder and owner of Edmondson Consulting Group, is an international business and family systems consultant. She is a dynamic speaker and coaches leaders and teams at the highest levels in Fortune 100 companies. Teresa guides smart, opinionated leaders around the world to do their best thinking during times of high stress and change. Her magic is seeing the potential of the moment and then engaging with families and leaders in ways that unlock their thinking, neutralize the turmoil, and set in motion a natural sequence of powerful shifts. She creates a climate that inspires individuals to see a better path forward and to find within themselves what is necessary to meet the moment. It's so great to have you both here. I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say today. To start off, so tell me, Kathy, what is it that you do? What does it mean to be a consultant to family wealth?
Well, first, let me say thank you for that introduction. I kind of blinked my eyes at it. If I were to introduce myself, more humbly, it would be that early on, I was a great observer of myself and my family and became intrigued with that I wasn't often acting individually. That I was responding to a system that out of my awareness. And that one fact has really guided my career in non-family businesses and for this new and very direct focus on families of wealth. It's how do families use the resources they've been given to move to the future? And to maximize the ability of each person to be the best person they can be. So, my original curiosity has increased, in fact. And how does wealth, excess resources, change the system and change the way people respond? And I think parents are aware of this and want to prepare their next generation thoughtfully. Money can be a real asset and can be a real drawback. And the opportunities are enormous. So that's what's intrigued me. And I am lucky that I keep learning about this process of resources, resource management, and family systems. So I think that's a more humble explanation of who I am. I mean, I was listening, I think, who is that person? What's he talking about?
We have a great PR person.
Yes, I mean, I gotta go back and look at that.
And what about you, Teresa?
Really?
I think one of the Kathy and I go back years and years, and I think it's our mutual interest and curiosity around Bowen theory specifically. I'm trained as a licensed professional counselor, But it wasn't until I got exposed to Bowen theory that I really began to see the potential for really helping people change. And I always struggled with the value proposition of therapy. People could go to therapy, every week for years and years and years and still be kind of struggling with some of the same things. And the thing that attracted me, and Kathy has spoken a little bit to this, is this idea of thinking beyond ourselves and thinking systemically, right? Looking at the bigger picture. And I do that a lot with my work with businesses and teams. I found that it was extraordinarily useful for two reasons. One is understanding that I'm just one part of a system I'm working with allows me to be a little bit more separate, and therefore it allows me to be a little bit more useful to the groups that I consult with. But the other value of thinking systems is that it's never just the presenting issue. It's always bigger than that. And if you can pull back and think about it in that way, you see more options, you see more potential. And then to give our audience context here, one of the things that Kathy and I began doing a couple of years ago was thinking about how, one, just this idea of how emotionally loaded money can be in families. And I was thinking this morning, Kathy, about the idea. I think sometimes money is the way that some of these emotional processes in families and in organizations too, how it actually kind of gets expressed. The money ends up being the way it gets operationalized. And so we kind of began an informal collaboration that became a more formal collaboration called the Family Portfolio, specifically around this idea of how families manage money. So I kind of dance in both of those worlds, but what Kathy and I have been thinking about is a lot of families of wealth have financial portfolios, but what would it be like to have a family portfolio? In other words, to understand the whole system, all of the messiness that comes with families. And if they had a way to think about this idea of money in a way that wasn't just reactivating old and maybe processes that were not serving the family, what incredible service that might be. So that's kind of been our curiosity over the last couple of years, and it's really, I think it's just been a fascinating journey.
So helping families with the relationship side of wealth management, the human side, I think, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
What well that's so a family finds you guys, they come in. What type of problems are they usually bringing? What's the challenge that they're facing?
Kathy, you want to go first?
Yeah. Let me give you a bigger picture. If you think about
Please.
families always evolving from the marriage to children to school to them leaving, families are always in the process of evolving. And they have a number of decisions to make as they evolve, and they have a number of responses to the environment. Increased wealth, loss of wealth, one child needing more, one child needing less, a cousin who needs help with a medical problem. So, as a family evolves over time, they have decisions to make. And those decisions are emotional decisions as well as financial. And they alter, adjust, move the family in one direction or another that often might not be where they want to go. So often a gift to one family member at the time makes sense. But how do you put it in context over this evolving family for the well-being of the people in it now and the future? It requires conversation that's often hard to do. It requires a familiarity with one another and the differing needs. It requires a systems view of the family as it has been, is now, and will be. So there are considerations that go into any decision. A family can make any decision, But if you can think about the system in which it's being made, you can set it up for success. So I've been working with a family for almost 20 years, four adult children, four adult offspring, and they are now, the father is now turning over the management of the assets. They have worked together, talked about gifting, talked about philanthropy. They know one another, so they're not in a trigger reaction when somebody wants to give money this way or they want more distributions. There's a familiarity and there's a set of individual guidelines that help them make decisions on this evolutionary track. So you think about it, things come up. You've got one child needs more money for medical. All the questions, what do you do about a cousin who's facing a critical illness and doesn't have money for care? How do you talk about it? How do you think about it? How do you put it into a process that the family understands what it stands for and what it's doing, whether they provide the money or not? And it is this family portfolio is a way to look at the family assets and what it needs as opposed to the financial assets. And it is a really exciting process to engage in. And, our culture doesn't find it easy to talk about money and differing needs. And what we're trying to do is make it a part, these are assets in the family. How do you talk about that comfortably or move toward more comfortability? So that's, I think, a way to describe it. And, I think about my own family and the differing needs and how do we talk about it? And the tendency is not to talk about it. And it can cause enormous problems and disruptions in families. So Teresa and I are working to find a way to talk about it for the benefit of the long-term family.
In fact, the
So is it,
phrase we use sometimes, Guillermo, is this idea of making the undiscussable discussable. Over the next 20 years, there will be the greatest transition of wealth between baby boomers and their children ever in the history of the world. And it's significant. And I think one of the things that really inspired Kathy and I to really begin to think about this idea of wealth transfer in a very intentional way is it is very hard for families to talk about wealth, to talk about money. And in fact, a lot of baby boomers, their kids have no idea how much money they have. And a lot of parents are scared to death that if the kids found out how much money they had, that it would ruin them, that they would sit down, they would stop working, they would stop doing all the things that they need to. So there's a tremendous amount of anxiousness within, especially parents who have amassed this wealth. Do I talk to my kids about it? If I do talk to my kids about it, how do I talk to my kids about it in a way that doesn't activate all of the messiness that we have in families, right? Dad always liked you better. I never felt like I got the time and attention from mom that I wanted. All of those things get kind of mushed up into this idea of who gets what and who gets how much and all of those kinds of things. And so if I had to say in a capsule what I think our secret sauce is, it's how do we help family have these kinds of conversations in a way that doesn't get everybody all worked up and that it activates the better thinking part of the family, not the reactive part. And in many cases, allows them to begin to talk about things that parents have been worried about. But didn't really know how to approach. So I think the family portfolio really is just a way of helping families tackle this conversation in a way that's helpful and productive.
So families come to you guys, well, with the problem is, what do I do with the assets that I have financially? And you're saying, well, what are the family assets? What do you w want to accomplish as a family? Trying to think more broadly about the issue, about a whole. And sounds like the challenge is all of these that families can have a much narrower view of what's going on, of what's possible, of what they're capable of what the challenges might be, of this one will get upset if I do this. How do I do it here, there? Who needs what? And you're helping them kind of take a step back and think more broadly about this and what really, what the, if I'm hearing you right, what the goal is as a family. How are we going to move the family into the future in a way that's productive for everybody?
Yeah, and Guillermo, if I might add, oftentimes this kind of history that families have with each other and all of the things that we as therapists know that families are dealing with, families are messy, right? We all have our things we're trying to work through. I think the other thing that's really significant about the systems approach and just this idea of helping families be thoughtful about this and tackle it in ways that are helpful rather than destructive to the family is unlike therapy, right? A lot of families have got members who've been in therapy for a while or they wish they were in therapy. But this isn't, I think one of the things that's important to differentiate is this isn't therapy. It is, and in fact, in many cases, Kathy and I both could share stories about this. I think one of the real keys to helping families discuss these kinds of things is really helping to highlight and to help the families draw on the strengths that they have within them. And so rather than focusing on maybe the way we've engaged with each other in the past, when you start to talk to a family about the strengths and wow, how did you guys come through that in such an impressive way with, such learnings, with such support for each other, et cetera. And so for many families, I think rather than seeing themselves maybe as, oh, we don't want to talk about that, or we don't want to talk about that person, they begin to look forward to it because it is a way of rather than looking at the system as being defective, you help the system see the way in which all of these things come together in a way that have been strengths and opportunities for the family. So they it's it can be very, very fulfilling for families to participate in it that way.
Yeah, kind of helping people see opportunities rather than obstacles to everything. Kathy, Teresa, so you got a family. They're in the in the middle of this. They're in the mire. They don't see the bigger picture. Is there something you notice? Like, how do you find the thread to start pulling to help people see this? Do you look for a particular? Is it usually one person coming in? Is it what do you start? Where do you get started? I'll throw it to Kathy.
Okay, let me give you a specific of what's happening lately.
Beautiful.
The largest increase in litigation is in trust litigation. Trust litigation happens when the beneficiaries of a trust are upset enough to bring a case about the terms of the trust. And this is a human systems problem. This is not a legal problem, but solved in the courts. And that's often because the person who has set up the trust has never talked to the beneficiaries about his or her thinking. And so you've got a situation that's being handled in the courts that's an emotional process of people feeling slighted, not equal, and all the things that are emotional being tried in a legal system. So where you really start, and I just give you that as the background of what's happening, is for me, I am really interested in learning about the person who brought the case, what their thinking is, what they're thinking about the family, and really trying to understand how they got to a place that they don't know why the trust was set up. I'm really interested in how they think. So I guess in therapy terms, you're starting with the person who has the problem and trying to understand how they see it, and then expanding that to the system. How did the system get to a point where they didn't talk about this? And that begins to open up, but it's always the person. It's being able to scope the larger system and then the person in the middle of it who is bringing the case. That's a way to it is a therapeutic process, but it's really, in my terms, I'm not a licensed therapist, is to try and understand the thinking and how it evolved over the generations, where it came from, where is this aggrieved view of the world, and how did it happen? How did it happen in factual events, and how did it happen in the relationship system? So you're kind of an explorer. You're trying to put these pieces together for the person, and you're really helping them think about it in a broader sense. I don't know what they should do legally, but I do know how to expand a problem to a systems view. Teresa, that I think that's part of the gift, is you see a problem embedded in a relationship and being able to expand it to the other factors that create it. We have to mark that down. That's, I think, the skill set.
Yeah, what is the
Yeah, I like
meaning of the what is the meaning of the money issue, really? Because money is just money. It's the meaning that gets attributed to it by a person that I think really makes a difference. When you talk about Guillermo, the thread of working with a client, I think there are a couple of things that are important that inform how certainly I think about it. I think Kathy shares a similar sensibility around it, is that we don't think we know the answer, but we have lots of really great questions. And so it's a very honoring process because we're not coming into it thinking that we know where the end needs to be or what the outcome needs to be. In fact, what we find is when we work with families, they come up with way more creative and innovative solutions than we ever would. But if we can just ask the questions that activate their thinking and allow them to think about it a little bit differently. And I think one of the other threads that is helpful for that is just going back and looking at multi-generational examples in the family of how money was managed. And one of the reasons that I am particularly drawn to this particular application of systems theory is when I go back and look at my own generations. I have an aunt and a great aunt and uncle that when the aunt passed away, she passed away last. Literally, family members showed up on the family homestead and pulled guns on each other. And you can't make this stuff up. And so when I go back into my generational history or knowing about money, it's very literally loaded. So how do you understand that in terms of I haven't come to blows with my brother, but I when my mom passed away, there were that knowledge allowed me to respond to her estate in a way that prevented there from being cutoffs between my two brothers. And I won't go into more detail than that, but it makes a difference. It makes, and I think at the core of it, the biggest reason why I think this work is so important is how this wealth transfer gets handled will make a difference whether family members go off on their own and there's hurt and there's upset and people might not ever talk to each other again, versus this event is used as a way to bring the family together in a way that it hadn't. it hadn't been able to do up until that point. The stakes are huge for families.
So it's actually a opportunity to it can be a process that opens things up rather than this a secretive process that divides has the potential to divide things further.
I like that word secretive. And it's why helping families figure out how to talk about it is so darned important.
Guillermo, I have a question for you. Okay.
Sure.
Can your family, I don't know your family, but your siblings or your parents, could they easily talk about money differences, where it's going, how it's used, shame on somebody who spent a lot of money on a frivolous thing? Was it an easily discussable?
I think it's gotten easier. We've gotten better about it as a family over time.
And how did that happen?
Well, I think part of it is I think there's always been some openness around finances. And then I think as my parents are getting older now and thinking about what comes next, there's been more talk about how are you guys. How are you and I have a sister. How are you and your sister going to manage life? This is what we have. This is what's going on. So it's been a lot more openness about it. I think it has to do with the degree to which my parents have can look into the future.
You're lucky. That's wonderful. So you're actually talking about it.
And another question, follow up to that would be, prior to your mom and dad starting to talk to you and your sister about it, were you wondering? Did you know how much money they had? Did you know how they think about it? Had you and your sister talked about it? At what point, did things begin to shift in that regard?
I don't think I wasn't thinking about it much. I think I was happy to be just participating in the family the way I was. I think as I've taken on more responsibility, I've gotten, I got married, and trying to build a life, I've become more interested in how I'm doing financially, and so I started talking to my dad about that more, and him to me, and I think just wanting to be more responsible in general. So I think that coincided with them opening up, and I think it was good timing.
Thanks.
No, great questions. I loved, first of all, I love this idea of expand the problem to a systems view. How do you do that for anything in your life? It's such a challenge.
Got that right.
And the anxiety of the
I'll give you a
moment.
practical example of that, Guillermo.
Please.
I was working with an international company, and in this particular industry, just seismic shifts are happening that are requiring businesses to operate differently than they ever have in their history. And one of the things that I have found is really helpful is helping people look at the kind of the history of how things were done. In other words, when you're thinking systemically, it's like, so talk to me about when did this group begin doing what it was doing? In some cases, it was last year, right? It's an AI group, and they were brought in to do some specific stuff, or this group's been operating for 80 years. They've been doing things pretty much the same way for 80 years. But just looking at the history of how this particular group does what it does and how it has changed over time, just the act of going back and having them educate me about how this group has managed up through to the current point, it shifts. It shifts the way the group sees itself. It shifts the way that the group thinks about it. It allows us to pull out all of the incredible capabilities that the group has demonstrated as they've been able to evolve and change over time, which says you've done this before, you'll be able to do it again. So it builds a sense of capability and competency that we don't know where we're going, but I think we'll figure it out. But it also, I think, helps to put the current crises in a larger context. So for me personally, as I look at everything that's going on in the world right now, the way that I kind of ground myself and don't, hopefully on a good day, don't get caught up in all the craziness that's going on in our world, is to look at and to reflect on things that are happening from a more historical context. So this isn't the first time our country's gone through struggles. It won't be the last time. But the ability to go back and look at history, for whatever reason, it seems to settle a group. It seems to settle a family. It helps them understand it in a larger context, a systems context. And that seems to make a difference.
Yeah, looking back, seeing what people have done, where they went wrong, where they went right,
What worked?
that's what worked, what didn't, it'd be really useful. Do you find that there can be a challenge with one generation to another, this like with trust, with maybe how they view the older generation views the younger's capacity, something like this.
Kathy, I know we both have examples. You want to field that one?
Well, I'm not quite. Can you just say the question again?
I guess I'm wondering about the generation that's transferring down the money. My imagination is telling me that how they view the capacity of the younger generation would influence how they handle that.
It has a great deal to do with it. And even my experience is that even if the next generation is highly capable, parents and have a way they want the money to flow down the generations and be used in the future. Even if you have very competent next generation, what you're dealing with is a mindset that developed from their history. And it's how do you coordinate two different mindsets? And sometimes they can't be coordinated. And that works too. This finding an answer that's good enough is really a very calming thought. And I've seen just really thoughtful people. When they think about the future, they have a way they want it to go. And the next generation has a way they want it to go. And even with great communication, they re reach some kind of resolve that's good enough. And I think that's a concept that I need to get more familiar with. It's good enough that the kids are not given distributions except for things like healthcare, education. When the next generation says, well, we've got a project we want to invest in, that's how do you resolve those differences when the older generation who shepherded the money say, well, I don't think that's what it's for. So after conversation, I'm really a fan of good enough. That is one of my mantras. This is good
I
enough.
like that, Sometimes you can't make everybody happy.
And I think articulating the difference and the differences of opinion is what's important, so that there's nothing under the table. This is where we've reached.
And from an evolution point of view, it's a huge advantage, right? So when the younger generation sees it differently, There's incredible opportunity within that as well. So helping families see that rather than thinking, oh my God, we've got the older generation conflicting with the younger generation, when just the way that you talk about it and the way you ask questions around it helps them see, wow, this is an incredible asset. This is, great diversity, and that's probably one of the reasons our family has done so well. So it's really fun to participate in that.
I love it. Do you think, have you guys seen, I'm sure you have, that can this process kind of solidify, push into the future pattern, like unhelpful patterns in a family? Does it also have the potential to shift those to some degree?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I'm thinking about a family that I've worked with, and in this particular family, the father was the wealth generator. The mom stayed at home and really wasn't very versed on financial investments and those kinds of things. She just kind of spent how she wanted to spend, and the dad, did whatever he had to do to be able to fund that lifestyle, and they actually probably didn't talk a lot about that, would be my sense from working with the family. And so here dad passes away, and mom is now kind of the matriarch of the family, and she really doesn't have a clue what to and there's a business, there's real estate assets. She's kind of been focused on, taking her grandchildren shopping and those kinds of things. And that's created some interesting dynamics in terms of how the grandkids perceive her, how they perceive money, et cetera. And so she's really at this place of having to figure out, what role am I going to play here? And do I just keep doing what I've always done, business as usual, or do I take on the challenge of perhaps learning a little bit more and doing something differently here? And this is a work in progress. We will see how mom handles this, but it is a great example of how what she's been doing is probably not going to be, if the family wants to have wealth that lasts for multiple generations, that won't happen unless mom really steps up and says, wait a minute, I need to do something different. And in this particular case, I think letting her kids be unhappy with her, letting her grandkids be unhappy with her. I'm not just a Pez dispenser of money, I'm not an ATM. And being okay with that for the larger good, for the bigger picture. So that's a work in progress. We'll see how that one comes out. But it is a shift if she chooses to make it.
That's such a great example because there's so much emotional life at play there. Wanting to kind of please others, to make everybody happy, to not maybe giving up some functioning of self to the marriage in the first place. And oh my goodness. But
And
what an opportunity to do something
it
different.
is. And one I think a lot of parents who might be in the audience can really relate to is the impact of what mom has done, this woman has done so far, is that the children who are the least functional are getting the most. And the kids who have successfully fledged, have successful businesses of their own, who are standing on their own 2 feet, end up kind of not getting anything, or because they don't want anything, and they're not going to ask because they don't need it. And yet it is creating this tension between the children who are doing fine and not hitting mom up for new cars and that kind of stuff. And then the kids who are constantly, constantly have their hand in mom's pocket. And the unfortunate thing about that is it's creating tension between the siblings. And that's the opportunity, is how do they navigate this in a way that is that's fair, that helps the family long term?
You're making me think of also you want, oftentimes people usually want what's best for the next generation. And part of that is providing resources. But another part is creating an environment where people have to grow. And it seems like such a challenging balance to strike when you have the resource, ample resources. And how do you think about delegating them in a way that there's still incentive to keep growing?
Yeah.
Kathy, is that
Well, you've just, a question I've had since I started Bowen Theory is, can you be a self-defined person if you're not supporting yourself? If you are using other resources beside ones generated by self, can you be self-defined? Is that a part of being a person who, in these terms that Bowen Theory uses, does support, financial support, create a dependency that goes against being a self? And I have thought about that question for a long time. With the high cost of living, parents who support their kids with houses or mortgage payments, does that erode a sense of self? So if you have any ideas, you two, about that, it is a real, because there is a great deal of subsidy for functioning families. So that's a question that I've had for a long time.
Yeah, the I think one of the hardest things for a parent, and I'll speak for self, is when you have enough, when you're not struggling, when you have
Right.
enough, you have more than enough. The hardest thing for a parent is to let their child struggle. It's just, and especially when I could just write a check and all of that would go away for my kid. Sometimes that's the easiest thing to do, is to write the check. But of course, the struggle is how one gets stronger. The struggle is how one grows. That's how you learn about yourself. And I think that's a key theme that we find, especially in families of wealth. How much do I allow my kids to struggle? And what are the trade-offs? And how do I do that in a way that is going to be the most helpful for the family? And there's a book that came out, gosh, maybe 10 years ago, called The Pathology of Altruism. And basically the premise was this: when does helping help and when does helping hurt? And that is just such a front and center question for so many families, all families, I think all parents. But especially if you have a lot of wealth and you could make all of your kids' struggles go away, man, how do I deal with that? And I feel bad if I don't do anything, and I feel bad if I fix it for them. So it's hard as parents to find one's way through that.
I imagine what's a good thing you guys are there.
Certainly thought partners.
How many kids do you have, Teresa?
I have three stepchildren and three grandchildren. So my
Oh.
husband and I, we were married for 38 years, and I kind of became an instant mom. And yeah, it's and I would say the marriage part was pretty easy. It was the navigating the differences between my husband and I of how to help and not hurt that was probably the hardest thing for us as a couple. To figure out, especially because they were not my biological children. And so on the one hand, I could be kind of objective. Their pain wasn't necessarily my same level of pain. And so I was okay with letting them experience the consequences of some of their choices. Much, much harder for my husband. And so if I'd say probably any of the hard fights in our relationship was around this very topic. Again, it's why it's one that's very close to home for me. How do you help without hurting? Which is what all of us, I think, as parents want to do.
Absolutely. And Kathy, do you have did you have
I have three adult kids and five grandchildren, and talking about money, which we did, which was not conversation in my family of origin, is talked about a great deal, maybe even too much. But thinking about now, like your parents, thinking about the future. And what are the needs, and how can I help without really impacting motivation? So we are talking about it a lot, and which is my response to being with families where it is not talked about. So we're getting somewhere, but it's been a multi-year process. And to explain to my kids what my resources are and kind of what the future will look like. But for me, being able to talk about it takes some of the sting out of the decisions that will be made. So it is so hard when you've been brought up where money was never discussed. How you spent it, why you spent it, when you got into trouble, what you did, how you could get into trouble. So it's been a challenge that I've taken my work or I my the two work and family have blended for me.
What is it about opening a conversation, opening community, having an open line that is useful? That's it.
I think for me as a consultant and therapist, especially in this space, I think that the biggest asset is a mindset of curiosity, not a mindset of judgmentalness, not a mindset of I know what's best, but one of curiosity. I really want to understand how my kids are thinking about money, how they're thinking about what they feel is owed to them. How they value it, what they think about in terms of how they manage their own money, where they feel like they've done well, where they feel like they've made choices that maybe weren't in their best interest. So it is hard sometimes, I think, as parents, especially if you have one child or more that maybe struggles with financial money, et cetera. It can be hard to stay in that curious place. Versus that loaded, judgmental. Let me lay a little wisdom on you here. But I'd say curiosity is the greatest asset. Kathy, you might see it differently, but that's been true for
No.
me in the work I do.
I go back to Guillermo to the kind of four purposes of a family over time. And one is to extract and manage resources from the environment to support life currently and in the future. And that means managing resources. And in order to do that well through the generations, you have to know what is what. I grew up in a family, my father was an attorney, my mother a homemaker. There was no discussion of money, how we earned it. Well, we knew he was a lawyer, how we invested it, what was important to him, what he wouldn't spend on. Those are important discussions that we never had. So he kind of didn't use that one of the four qualities of a family to educate us. And so when he died, there was a number of challenges that faced the four of us. There were four girls that would have been gone if he had talked to us about it. It was a real it was a real explosion. He left us with a trustee who we didn't like, two trustees that the four of us didn't like. And so after the grief of the death, we had to deal with these two men who we didn't believe in, who were probably just fine, just okay. They would have been, but we had to, it was a diversion of emotionality. That's what happened to us. It's costly and time consuming.
Kathy, your comment also, I think, speaks to one of the things that we often hear from financial advisors and estate attorneys who we often will work with. Those are oftentimes folks who will refer families to us because they're struggling with not the money so much as the family. How are we going to manage all of this? But the idea that oftentimes what happens is, and Kathy's example is a good one, is that when a patriarch or matriarch dies and the money shifts to the next generation, oftentimes, I think, I don't know what the number is, Kathy, maybe 80% of the time, that may be a little high, I'm not remembering, that the next generation will basically change financial advisors. They will change who's managing the money. And so, and part of the reason for that is that the generation, the mom or the dad, they are the ones who built the relationship with that trustee or with that attorney or with that financial advisor. But if they're not talking about money, if the kids are not being brought in, they're not developing a relationship with those people. And so they don't trust, they don't know, they don't understand. And those people could be an incredible asset to the family because they did have conversations with mom and dad. They do know what was important to mom and dad. That's why mom and dad set it up this way. That's an extraordinary resource. And if you build the relationship while mom and dad are still alive, then the odds are better that the family can then see them as a resource and pull on that.
Yeah, the closeness, the not talking, increases like the tension, the anxiety, the rigidness in a lot of ways. That's interesting. And the openness, there's less uncertainty if we're talking about it. It's beautiful. How did you guys get, Kathy, how did you get into this working with businesses and organizations and wealth management, and what was your kind of path? Or did you just appear in it?
Just like a genie. No. I first met Dr. Bowen when he counseled my brother-in-law, who was a psychiatrist, in a problem. This is a quick thing. And my brother-in-law stopped seeing him, but I read an article in People magazine that featured Dr. Bowen, and there was something in the way he was described. And then I subsequently mentioned it to my brother-in-law, and he said, "Well, I can make a referral to you to Dr. Bowen." At the time, I was married and very much in love with what I thought was a lawyer, not a family business member. And over that period of time, my husband joined his family business. And that set off enormous tension in the marriage. So for a number of years, I coached with Dr. Bowen, as did my husband. And it was the story of this marriage, this family, and this business. And I knew that this was going to be a resource to family businesses. So all of a sudden, I started getting referrals from family businesses. And then I joined the Family Firm Institute, which was started about the same time, which was focused on family business. And it has grown exponentially. It's headquartered in Boston. And I was the president, I was like the fourth president of this international organization focused on family business. So it was a personal trajectory. But Dr. Bowen made sense to me in ways that other therapies did not. And I have a number of interviews with him that I've transcribed about family business. So I was very lucky that my problems in my marriage coincided with his time to be able to see me, and then that kind of morphed into a focus on family business and unrelated businesses, which I do think Bowen Theory has a great deal to offer. Great
What,
deal.
yeah, would part of that be this systems way of thinking, seeing the like the family as the emotional unit, the organization as kind of an emotional
Emotional,
unit?
absolutely.
And with family business, they get intermingled and they get convoluted in ways that it's sometimes hard for families to tease apart, especially with in-laws who are working in a company, and then divorces happen and remarriages. It's there's a lot.
I saw some something online the other day where the guy was like, "Why are you giving me all this work?" And the boss was like, "Well, I had to hire my brother-in-law. What else am I supposed to do?"
It's a fascinating area and of intrigue of emotional process with the business as a product to deliver. It's fascinating to me.
And it is a unique space. I would agree with Kathy. And for me, I kind of came into it serendipitously. A client reached out to me for some executive coaching. They had a small family business. But what you mentioned, Guillermo, one of the dynamics you have in a family business that you don't have, let's say in a large corporate entity, is you've got the brother-in-law who thinks that a good day of work is on the golf course, and then you've got people who are hired employees who then feel like they're having to pick up the slack, and so you get resentments, and you can't fire family members. You can fire people who aren't part of the family, and so it just gets really, really nuanced. And what do you do if a family member isn't working out? And if you fire one of them, what happens then? And it's just a there's just a lot to think about, which I think normal organizations that are not family businesses, they don't have to. They don't have to deal with those things.
It's a different type of intensity.
Absolutely. And the stakes are really high. We're talking about my family here.
If you fire your brother-in-law, you might get divorced.
Or I lose my sister because
Or
she's going to side with him, and now we're not talking, and now the cousins aren't, they don't get to experience birthdays together. It just goes on. It can go on and on and on.
And have you found that people have the potential to loosen up in this?
I love that phrase, Guillermo. We talk about that a lot, is tight athletes don't perform well. They make mistakes. They're not at their best. And when they can be loose, and present and accounted for, everybody does better. And so one of the conversations Kathy and I often have is, okay, with this particular family, some families actually need to tighten up a little bit. They're not, they need to be more focused. They need to be having conversations. They're too loosey-goosey. We need to start having conversations about money. But I'll speak for myself. Oftentimes, those are not the families that I get called in to work with. Usually, they're extremely tight. They're very anxious, and so you want to be very thoughtful about not tightening them up even further. And so the goal becomes: how do we bring humor? How do we bring lightness? How do we bring curiosity to this in a way where they start to relax? And believe it or not, Guillermo, sometimes that's the secret sauce, is just when they can begin to relax a little bit. They think better, and then they find their own solutions. We just untighten them. So I love that. I love that language that you use around that. I think it's very, very accurate.
Did you do you have a do you have a little story vignette of somebody loosening up?
So I'll give one while Kathy is thinking. It's a fairly current one, a family I'm working with. The son, who actually was he is heading up the family business after dad passed away, and he was getting remarried,
Ooh.
And there so we had a blended family coming in, but more importantly, he had been single for, gosh, 10, 12 years. And I think mom had really grown to depend on him, and so little things start to come up where he's like, "Why is my mom doing that?" Or, "Why didn't my mom invite us, you know?" Or, "Why did my mom ignore my fiance?" You know, those kinds of things. And as a consultant and as a coach, I could say, "Wow, I don't know. Why would she do something like that? You need to have a meeting with her." And so, you know, versus it's like, you know, think about it. You've been kind of the all by yourself for the last 10, 12 years. My bet is the family's really come to lean on you, and they're probably trying to figure out, you know, what does this mean in terms of, are you going to change? Are our relationships going to change? Am I still going to be important to you? So it makes total sense to me, right, that everybody's kind of trying to figure this out. So just engaging around the topic in a way that is normalizing and is lighter. Oh, you know, this ain't going to be the last time, right, that a family member is questioning, you know, are you still going to be my big brother, and am I still going to matter to you? And you guys will figure it out. You have your strong family, et cetera, et cetera.
That's Teresa, that's such a great example of how deep and subtle the emotional process is in this. You know, where this guy was alone for on his own for a while, became really important to the family, and then the expectations build. He's always going to be there, he's around, he's helpful, and then he gets his own life a little bit, and it's shakes things up. There's uncertainty in that, and it makes people anxious in the family. Why aren't you paying attention to me? Are you going to be here for me? It's fascinating how these little shifts can bring out so much emotion in people.
Beautifully said.
Anyway, I see it with couples all the time. Even with my students in class, so it's really interesting. Kathy, do you have a story? How many stories do you have?
Well, I'm trying to think how I can describe it without drawing it. I hope this makes sense. If it doesn't, exit out. A
Okay.
young woman, very successful business with her father, started a part of the company in different part of the country. And her mother, she hadn't seen in 5 years. And her father was dating a woman. The woman didn't like her, and she didn't like the woman. And the father and she kept getting in tighter and tighter fights, disagreements that centered around the business. So you had the girlfriend, the father, and the absent mother. I think when this young woman, who was really doing a good job, but in so much conflict with her dad, started reaching out to her mother and to her father's girlfriend to just get to know them, the tension with the father relaxed. Now, how do you explain that? How do you explain that the owner of a company and his daughter would be able to talk more thoughtfully, quieter, because she went back and talked to her mom? I mean, this was the beginning steps, and also went to the father's girlfriend, who she despised, to spend some time with her. How do you explain that to anybody about systems? How that frees up your mind to get along and frees up the system. So it's those kind of things that it's, I think, encouraging people to move beyond things that are comfortable in relationships that frees up the system. And I've seen it, and It's been something I try and do in my own life. And sometimes it's just hard and you can't do it. And sometimes you can do it. But I hope that that was an example of somebody getting looser
That's it's a
and how
great
it shifts.
example. So, well, it's such a great example. You know, this, I imagine they're coming to you, or one of them's coming in saying, "We're fighting, we can't agree on business things," and you're saying, and you're, as you open up, suggesting, you know, well, reach out to your mom. But what the hell does that have to do with
And I really resist. I've never met the dad. So the idea might have been to have the father and son come together, a father and daughter come together and resolve their difference. But somehow this was in the relationship system with that mother and that girlfriend. So, you know, it there's something about Bowen theory that values the relationship system, whether it is working or not, and to not be afraid of going to where it's not working or where it is working. I think that's the real value for me, is to not be afraid of going to places where there's cutoff or upset or conflict. Not to resolve it, but to understand it.
Guillermo, I think you also can appreciate this, how what I think so valuable about thinking systems, whether it's a team, a family business, transfer of wealth, couples counseling, is so many, I'll call it interventions out there, are so based on how people feel. And what I have found is so useful in framing things in a systemic way is that it helps a person get comfortable with being uncomfortable. So the woman in Kathy's example couldn't stand this stepmom or potential stepmom to be. And a lot of people would say, no, I'm not going to go talk to her. I can't stand her. Versus a more mature, and I would say informed by theory. Why do I want to do this? Because it's going to help my relationship with my dad go better. That's why I want to do this. And so making peace with the fact that oftentimes personal growth and movement and shift within a family happens oftentimes when we are when it's uncomfortable. And I just find one of the real values of coaching is just the ability to be there in the uncomfortableness and to normalize it. Yeah, you're growing. This is uncomfortable. You haven't done this before. And that's okay. That's not a sign that anything's wrong. In fact, it's a sign that you're doing something pretty important here. I think I'm keeping things comfortable is sometimes not useful for families. I can't let my feelings dictate. Sometimes it has to be informed by theory, by I have to have a relationship with this person. So how am I going to do that?
Yes, framed by a principle or goal rather than the feeling,
Of the moment, absolutely.
feeling of the moment. Absolutely. You know, so, you know, somebody's coming with a very specific issue, like conflict with their partner, their father, who's their partner, or whatever the scenario is. How are you guys? Sounds like you guys are having, you have something in your head that's helping you not get caught up in their anxiety about what this problem is, their narrow view of it. And we've been using the word Bowen theory. Bowen theory is a, for everybody listening, it is a way to think about individuals more broadly. It sees the family as the emotional unit rather than just the individual. It's people in context. Is this what you're keeping in your head? You keeping is theory what helps you not get caught up in it? And what if and if not that, what else helps you? Go, Kathy. You worked with Bowen. I wanted to start with you.
I hope this answers the question. I'm an oldest sister of sisters. I think I know what you ought to do. But I don't. And I've made a lot of mistakes. And Bowen theory has helped me figure out my place in the system as a family member and as a consultant. And my role in a fa in any kind of consulting engagement is just to help people think. And I'm good at that. I'm good at curiosity and I'm good at questions. And it has been a constant training over the years to not know the answers to somebody else. But I am skilled at questioning and painting a bigger picture. And so that's what I turn to. What is it that hits me about the beauty of this situation? And so I've early on realized my natural inclination to have answers for others. And so I've got a pretty good training schedule of how to stay out of other people's lives, but to be a really good thought partner. So that's really the best answer I can give you. I think Bowen theory, in many respects, saved my life in my ability to be a self in a highly anxious system, which I was confronted with in my 20s and 30s and 40s, and have a way to manage myself through that. And I credit that way of thinking. So it's a very interesting process as I look back on it. But I think it has guided me through some real difficult situations. And there was a price to pay. I mean, it wasn't all success, but in the end, I really credit this way of thinking with saving my life in a couple situations.
Jeremiah, I think another example of how systems thinking makes a difference is when someone comes to me with a question about their family or how they're going to have conversations with their kids about money. You naturally, if you're a systems thinker, you naturally ask about the broader parts of the system. And I find just the act of asking, what about, the cousins, grandparents on your side, grandparents on your wife's side, to what degree have you talked to the kids? To what degree? Just the questions you ask broaden the way a person thinks about the situation. And I think that that also makes a big difference. They start to see it differently. Wow, I hadn't thought about it in the context of the my dad's divorce and his three marriages. And now I'm starting to see it a little bit differently. So it affects the questions and the people that you pull in, or certainly that you ask about. Some families are twitchy about, we don't talk to those cousins, or we don't, I don't want them involved in this process. But that doesn't mean you can't ask questions that get people thinking a little bit more broadly.
I love it, and that makes a lot of sense. You have just even the notion that there is a broader picture can be useful in asking these questions when you go in, not getting caught up in it. And Kathy, if I'm, I think one thing I heard in what you said, it's been true for me too, is that working on your own life from that perspective not only can be useful to you, but it helps you be figure out what's helpful. With when you're in this position of being a consultant or a coach or
Right.
a counselor. Do you guys have any questions for each other? Any curiosities that What do you guys say, or what are you working on now? What have you guys been chatting about?
Well, my focus right now is to reach more financial advisors and trust and estates lawyers because I'm intrigued with kind of the impact of family decision making on them. So that's really what I'm focused on in meeting with and talking to them about their roles, because their roles are pretty intense with these family disagreements. So that's what I'm really interested in, hearing what their experience is.
And we've
You're
actually got
not.
a we've got a meeting and being scheduled with a financial advisor who actually referred a family to us. And so one of the things that we are really interested in is what shifts did they see in the family? What was their experience as a financial advisor in bringing us in? And were there learnings? Are there things that they would do differently? Are there things that we would do differently as we worked with the family? And I just think that's so useful to not just have our own perception of, and I'll give you an example of a family Kathy and I were talking about. And I was saying, when I started work with this particular family, I really, my hope was that they could get here. And they got here. And I had a lot of judgments. I'm like, if I'd been a better consultant, maybe if I'd been a better coach, then, it would look like this. And Kathy's wise counsel was, sometimes that's huge for a family. And what this maybe over time and over multiple years, maybe, but don't underestimate the kind of shift that that this was for that particular family. So the opportunity to get outside our own work and to talk with the other parts of the family system, in this case, a financial advisor or an estate attorney, has also been it's one, it's fun, but it also is really informative. It helps us, I think, fine-tune how we work with families and what we do that makes the biggest difference, and to not put our agendas on them, which is sometimes hard to do.
I hear you. What's your sense of what's raised the anxiety lately? That people, families seem to be turning more toward, I guess, fighting with each other through the legal system. What's your sense of what's contributed to it?
Well, I like to think of triangles here, and how if a part of the triangle, if a member of a family has not been brought in, they're not aware, they haven't been consulted. Usually, those are the folks who file the lawsuits, and so the ability to see the triangles and who have we left out and where are the relationships not established, I think those that is a really good place to start. But I would also say, Guillermo, the world's just a very anxious place right now. It's probably, I've never seen the world in such turmoil in my years as I'm seeing it today, my perspective. And we'd be crazy to think that that doesn't influence everybody in a system. And so sometimes it's about parsing out how much of this is the bigger milieu, anxiety within the world right now, and then to what degree is that getting played out in the family? It's certainly a good place to start. Kathy, you were going to say something.
I think speaking to what Teresa said, the level of frustration and being frustrated on so many fronts when something like this comes up, let's seek an outside resource. It's a relief. It is the triangling process. And I get it. I mean, that makes sense. I don't have the internal strength to kind of keep fighting, disagreeing with my family members. So the opportunity is to learn a new way to resolve these differences. that I think is quite exciting, to be able to talk about things that are meaningful with people who are meaningful to you is really exciting. And there's ways, you don't just jump in, but this the gradual ways of doing it can be so rewarding for those people who are willing to try it. And things that you thought to be undiscussable become discussable. And that's a great kind of accomplishment.
A real service to families,
Right.
Kathy. That's what draws me to this work. It really is a service.
Yeah. I love that. It's a message of hope, you know.
Yeah.
I like to think, you know, speaking of the larger milieu of anxiety, as you put it, Teresa, that families have the opportunity to bring calm to that, you know, and that that can spread, perhaps. Anyway, I got a question for you guys. What do you hope people take away after working with you? What would be something somebody's been working with you a couple of months, a few years? What's your hope? Speaking of that, of what they might leave with. Whoever wants to start.
I'll start. A systems view, no question about it. To take an intractable problem and put it into a systems perspective. That's what I hope they take away. And a good time. I'm for a
I
good
love it.
Yeah,
Wonderful.
a sense of looseness and a sense of confidence. We got this. We wouldn't have gotten here without a lot of positive attributes in this family. And we may, you know, we have our things and we're not a perfect family, but by gosh, we have a lot of attributes that helped us get here, and a sense of looseness. And we'll figure this one out. We're not broken. And I would say that would be the other key takeaway that I think is important for families we work with, because so many times people, when they engage a therapist, they feel like at some level their family's kind of messed up, that they're doing it wrong, that they're not as good as other families. And so to just normalize, all families deal with this to some degree or other. You guys are not unique with that. Every family has to kind of find their way, and you're not broken. You're just in the process of kind of figuring out how to do this, and do we want to make some pivots along the way. And just knowing we're not screwed up as a family, when you send the message, you guys got this, and you've got a lot of strengths in the family that helped you get this far, and let's tap into those. I think that also settles a family, and it makes them looser, less twitchy about things that people say, and then they begin to find their own way with things.
Beautiful. Kathy, do you have a last thought, Kathy?
No,
I love it. That's
I
perfect. That's perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much, Teresa and Kathy, for being here. And
Thank
I had a
you.
wonderful time with you.